Well, good morning. There's a moment now before I get started with the talk to just say hi or say a few words if it moves you. You can type in a message in the chat just to say a few words about what's present with you right now. I really enjoy it when people do share as I am. Just gives me a sense of what's going on. It's kind of a feeling of connection to what's in the room with us. Loving the sound of the birds outside my window. Yeah, it feels like spring, doesn't it? Suz is happy to be with the Sangha this morning. Yeah. Feeling springy. Yep, me too. Yeah. Happy to feel the sunlight coming through my window. Yeah. I have that too. I have a window right here. And I can see the sun reflecting on a fence outside. It's lovely. Lauren, good morning from West Seattle. Wonderful to be here with you. Looking at all the new green leaves popping out. Maria, simply happy to be here this morning. Be there this morning. Yeah. All over the place this morning. The meditation is the beginning of grounding my wandering mind. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Linda. Yeah. Rebirth is coming up and happy Easter from Jerry. Yeah, wonderful. That's right. It's Easter today. I'll be going to a dinner later today. Namaste from North Seattle. Very happy to be part of this meditation, enjoying sunshine and greening of earth. Thomas says meditation helped me reconnect to the present moment. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Thomas. All right, thank you for letting that into the room. It's wonderful to hear these comments. You can keep them going, although I'll turn from here now to the subject of our talk. Talking about how we're feeling right now, it's kind of funny. It's almost paradoxical to me. When I think about Sila, I still get this kind of heavy feeling that I felt when I was a kid and a young adult. And I still kind of feel it now, when you Sila is translated, as ethics or ethical behavior, as virtue, morality. You hear all these translations for the word Sila, our topic for today. And yeah, that's the first blush of connotation that I get is this like, oh, this heaviness. Right? And then paradoxically, as I do research for a talk like this, I just get happier and happier. it just brings me to that state. And others who've talked this month have talked about this, right? About the joy and the lightness that can come from Sila. And I think part of it is that I'm listening to talks about that and I'm hearing stories. Right? These stories of moral behavior that come up in other people's talks. And they make you feel good. When we hear something heartwarming about compassion, we feel good through that. Right? And that touches on how we can feel ourselves when we're in line with our own integrity, with our own compassion, with our own ethics. I think that's what it is. I think that's why I end up feeling happy at the end of this. So my talk today is in some sense about this paradox, right? About what's heavy about morality, about the work that's required for ethical behavior, and also this lightness, right? That kind of results when we are in line with ourselves. I'm going to start with the lightness. And just to say it, we feel light when we're acting within our ethical standards. We do. Right? One personal story that really comes to mind here is When I was a kid, I was prone to exaggeration. I still am. When I tell stories, I make them big. It kind of got out of hand. I was a kid, I would tell these stories, I would exaggerate, they would become good stories, people would listen. And it got beyond that. I would work in little things that just weren't true. And I would find that, especially if I was talking to people as a kid, and it was a casual encounter, or someone I didn't think I was going to see again, or something like that, I would start to come up with all kinds of ideas that, really just came out of my head about what was real and, what was part of my story. And it started to get out of hand in the ways that these things do. Sometimes people I thought I would encounter just once or twice became people I encountered all the time. And then there were these things I'd said that just weren't quite right. They became, stories I had to manage. And I remember this, do you all, do you, some of you may remember this song by Depeche Mode called Policy of Truth. Does anyone have this story in their background? If you don't, it's this really heavy, it's a pop song, but it's this really heavy song I remember listening to. It's called Policy of Truth, and it's all about, the dark consequences of not telling the truth and how, your problems multiply and all of these things. And I remember thinking as a kid, oh man, this is happening. What's going on? And I kind of made up my mind to just stop doing this, to just cut it out. And, at first I probably cut it out too much, I got really strict with myself. And I've come back to a place, I think, since then, where I kind of know what exaggeration makes a good story and is fun and light, and, is something we cannot take too seriously, and what's real, what's important to really stick to the truth on. But I just remember as a kid, even going, with the hardcore route of it, yeah, I just felt so light afterward. It was such a relief to not have to hold these stories and to just like, I didn't have to think before I spoke in the same way. I could just sort of say, I was going to say what was truthful. It became a habit that I would just say what was truthful. And I just didn't have to monitor myself in the same way. I didn't have to monitor who I was talking to and what they knew and what, it was just so light. Yeah, that's all I can say about it. So maybe this resonates in some way with some other thing. It may not be truth telling, but something else that we've done in our past that, maybe wasn't quite aligned ethically with who we want to be. And how, when that changes or shifts, we've often felt the lightness of that shift, right? How much of a relief it is to then act with integrity. Carrie gave a talk on Monday. Did anyone hear Carrie's talks on Monday? She gave a talk, and she gave a couple of talks, and she talks about moral beauty and stories of moral beauty and how they affect us, right? And she gave a delightful, you should go and listen to her talk. I'm not going to steal her example, but she gave this wonderful talk about people caring during the pandemic about workers she saw. Going, working with at a veterinary clinic, who had to come outside to people in their cars to treat their animals in the rain, and they would walk in and out to, she had a sick hamster, and she was in the car with this sick panting hamster, and she would see the care of these workers moving back and forth in the rain under these adverse conditions. It's a pandemic that no one asked for. That means that they can't see these animals in their clinic, and they have to go through this just to treat them, and just the kindness of that. It was a really touching story. Go listen to her talk. But I saw one just yesterday that I wanted to share, Stories of Moral Beauty. And it was a New York Times article, and it's about the crew of that ship that struck the Key Bridge in Baltimore. Has everyone heard this story by now? It's the story of a big container ship that was, when it was leaving the port of Baltimore, it struck a bridge and the bridge collapsed. And there are six people, I think, still missing who were construction workers on the bridge. It's a key bridge, this bridge. I've crossed it myself, and it reflects a lot of hardship for the city. I spoke to a friend of mine in Baltimore just the day after it occurred, and she was just talking about the feeling in the city, the sadness. And you can imagine also how you could regard the crew of the ship who has struck this bridge and destroyed it, right? Just imagine, it's a crew of foreign sailors who just struck a bridge in your city, and it snarls traffic, and it's going to be expensive and time-consuming to repair, and it's going to affect everyone. And you can just imagine there's plenty of animosity on social media and other places for what happened, right? But this story in the New York Times just reflects a different side to the story. They ask this question, and there's a quote. It says, "While officials investigate what could have caused the tragedy, another question has emerged this week. What could the crew members who have limited access to the outside world be going through right now?" And it records the responses of some people. One person, Joshua Messick, who's the executive director of a religious nonprofit that seeks to protect the rights of mariners, said they must feel this weight of responsibility that they couldn't stop it from happening. They quote another person who said that they've been keeping in touch with two crew members and just reminding them that we're here for them. Right? You can imagine this crew. They're stuck in a place that is not their home. They're on the ship currently. They can't leave it. And they have this grueling job. They have to maintain the ship under the same difficult conditions they would if the ship were at sea. It's a tough job. And there's suddenly this spotlight on them, this kind of unwanted spotlight from the world. And to hear, we're here for them, right? From the people who are outside, who you've just deeply inconvenienced to most people and, harmed to some people, right? There are people who died as a result of this, who fell into the water. That same person, Joshua Messick, quote, says that, he sent a care package to the crew through a salvage company that was helping with operations. In the package were candy, home-baked muffins from a concerned local union chapter, and thank you cards from children. These were thank yous for being so prompt in sending the message that the ship was out of control, saving more lives by acting promptly to get everyone in the way of that bridge out of the way. And a quote from the article says, "With so many questions still unanswered about the crew members' next steps, Mr. Messick said he was eager to provide them with trauma care and emotional support. On Friday, he wrote a letter to the captain, which was delivered by another vessel. 'We're here to support you,' it read." It just opened my heart to hear this story. This is a community that was deeply harmed. And to hear these messages of support coming from the community, thinking compassionately about the people who are on this ship, who, are far from home, whose lives have also just been completely changed. They were talking in this article about how people are worried for their jobs in the future. Will they ever get work again after this happened? But it didn't have to be that people turned with compassion to those folks. You can imagine being snarled in the traffic and thinking, that darn ship and the people who ran into it, that could have been another reaction, right? So what does this point us to, this story? It points us to this feeling that we can turn to of compassion, this choice we have for how we respond. Another person I'm reminded of, another story here, is I have a colleague who has this quality. You've probably seen this in some people. There are people who are just always speaking directly from their heart. You know, it feels like there's almost no filter for some of these people, where they just say what's in their minds and hearts. And when I think about this colleague of mine, I'm reminded, you know, when I'm aligned with my morals, there is this feeling that you can say anything in your heart openly without guarding it, because I can trust that what I'm about to say is not going to be harmful. And it won't reflect badly on me. It won't lead to some harm because my heart's just feeling pure. You know, we can just speak openly. And this colleague of mine just reminds me of that. He's always speaking from such a pure heart that he can be unguarded, you know. And sometimes he's not feeling good. Sometimes what he's saying is not, you know, cheerful content. It's just what's inside of him. But people come to trust him. People really do trust him where I work. Because you know that there's nothing deceptive coming from him. You know that what he's saying is what's true and what's aligned with it, what's in his heart. He's safe. And other people feel safe around him. And they tell him things that they probably wouldn't tell other colleagues. You know, he just has that quality about him. So as a caveat, I don't mean to say here that we should all just blurt out what's in our hearts in all circumstances, right? You know, we should listen to our own instincts about what's safe for us. But what I am saying is the feeling of being able to freely release what's in our hearts is wonderful, right? When it's possible. And we can get closer to that when we're in line with our ethics. When we're speaking from a place of integrity, it's one thing unlocked in us that prevents us from just being free, right? It's one thing we don't have to be guarded about. And wouldn't we all want to get to that place? So, what characterizes these stories I've been telling? There's compassion, right, in the ship story, and there's this lightness that comes with integrity. You know, from my colleague, and in the story I told earlier about speaking the truth when I was a kid. So, how do we get to these places of compassion and integrity, right? This is where the work comes in, right? And, you know, I mentioned at the beginning, oh, when I first hear Sila, ethics, integrity, I go to this place of heaviness, right? It doesn't have to all be heavy, right? But there is work. There is work involved. So, Ajahn Suchito describes our goal here as being the goal to not defile ourselves and not defile others. We defile ourselves by thinking unskillful thoughts. This is the way that he puts it. Now, going back to the example with my colleague, you know, when our thoughts and feelings are trustworthy, right? When those things that come from within us are trustworthy, we can express them with the confidence that we're expressing them from a place of integrity, right? And that's not defiling ourselves. That's not putting upon ourselves this weight or burden of having to censor these unwholesome things that are within us. So this is the motivation to come to a place of thinking wholesome thoughts, of thinking skillful thoughts, of being kind of having this internal pureness. This is not defiling ourselves. And the other side is not defiling others, right? We defile others when we say unskillful things, or see others in unfriendly ways, or lack compassion. These are the things Ajahn Suchito pointed to. Now think of the ship crashing story. You know, do we want to be the people who are resentful of this crew from some other place who ruined our morning commute? Or do we want to be the people who have compassion for a group of people stranded in a foreign place and who are worried and have this unwanted spotlight? Right? Which people do we want to be? So it's hard in a world that we're in where compassion and integrity spring forth naturally, right? to give just one example of what makes it hard, you know, social media has this scattering effect, right? Whatever our attention was on a moment ago, when we look at our phones, we enter a world of other ideas, other emotions, other information that wasn't part of our plan before we turned our eyes to look at the phone. It scatters us, right? It causes us to lose our resolve. So even if we start the day with a resolve for it to be a certain way, to live with a certain integrity, you know, we can get scattered. We also imbibe the emotions of others in this way, right? Wherever we once were, whatever our intentions were, you know, we really get swayed, we get moved around. This is just one example. There's so many things in the world that make it hard to stay with this resolve that we probably all have. We'd all like to be people who live with integrity, right? So how do we do this? Well, one way that we've pointed to already is turning to compassion. And what I really like about this way, well, actually, before I get to that, I want to give a definition of sila that Carrie Peterson gave in one of her Monday talks. She said something like this: to embody sila is to feel sensitive to the impact of our actions on our own well-being and the well-being of others. To feel sensitive to the impact. And she goes on to say, it is innate, this sensitivity. It shines when we're feeling safe, when we have a sense of belonging, when we're not afraid. Right? So she goes on to say that in order to become expressions of this sila, we must value this sensitivity, right? This sensitivity to the impact of our actions on us and on others. We know that we feel it, right? But sometimes we push it away, right? If we do something that makes us not feel good, sometimes our reaction is to kind of put it aside, you know? I can think of times when I've walked by people asking for money and I've not given the money and I have that feeling. And to get on with my day, I push it aside, right? But this is about valuing the sensitivity, valuing the feeling that we have, right? Honoring it. This is about letting our hearts shine, as she puts it. And here's what I like about it, and here's why it doesn't imply work or heaviness to me in the way some of the other tactics do. This is less a cultivation of something foreign to us, as much as an uncovering of what is natural to us. This turning to compassion, right? This is removing the crud that obscures our hearts. This is allowing ourselves to feel into that sensitivity that is innate, right? So in a way, this isn't the hard slog up the hill. This is uncovering stuff. This is a cleaning. This is a coming to who we really are. So there's also cultivating the right conditions, right? This is another way we can get to this state of being in integrity and in compassion. You know, part of what Carrie said again, she mentioned that this sila shines when we're feeling safe, when we have a sense of belonging, when we're not afraid, right? Whew. Feeling safe, sense of belonging, not afraid. How do we get there, right? These are all preconditions. They're conditions that are helpful for ethical conduct. And some of these are conditions, these are challenges that come with us, right? You know, often for reasons that are outside of our control, they're not our fault, right? You could struggle with a sense of belonging because of racism. You could struggle with fear because you're a woman in a society constructed for men. You know, there are things that we come with that block feeling safe, feeling belonging, feeling unafraid, right? So acknowledging that some of this just comes with the territory, what can we do, right? How can we create these conditions? So I'll start with meditation, right? This isn't going to stop the things that are part of our society, but it does allow us to see the world more clearly and see the lenses with which we view the world, right? We know that meditation helps with this. We see more clearly, right? We become aware of the filters we use, the lenses we use. Sometimes they're lenses of judgment, right? Sometimes they're lenses of othering when there doesn't need to be othering, right? Another thing meditation helps with is just in noting the impermanence of all phenomena, right? Seeing everything arise and fall. This helps us come to terms with our own impermanence, impermanence in our lives and death, right? And all of this, so meditation in these ways can lead to a release of fear, a seeing clearly, and maybe we've all felt that sometimes in meditation we can reach a sense of connection. A sense of connection to all things around us. This improves our sense of belonging. These are all creating conditions conducive to ethical conduct. Another thing that helps. So I mentioned turning to compassion, right? Uncovering the crud on our hearts. I've mentioned cultivating conditions, right? And one of them is by meditating. Helping us feel safe, belonging, not afraid. Another one here that helps cultivate the conditions is surrounding ourselves with the right people and the right environments to whatever extent that's possible. We don't have full control of that, right? We come across who we come across. But there are parts of this that we can change. We can surround ourselves by people who act ethically. By people who embody the principles or the characteristics we want to embody. You know, that can go a long way. A whole other category here is resolve, determination. We're going to talk more about that later this year. It's one of the paramis, just like sila, that we're going through this year. But to bring it up a little bit now in the context of sila, you know, Ajahn Suchito talks about the Pali word chetana, right? This is often translated as intention, but he notes that it's slightly different. It's the turning of mind, okay? And so we can turn our minds even without consciously intending it, right? Like in the case of where we look at our phones, and we didn't really mean to look at our phones and read that story, but we do, and our minds are turned, right? That is an example of chetana. That's an example of turning, even though it's not an intentional turning, right? So distinguishing chetana from this other kind of intention points in a certain way, right? We can cultivate the right chetana, the right turning of mind, by turning our minds with real intention to the things we value. This takes resolve. This takes work. This is the part that is about hard work, right? This takes noticing what we're doing and pausing. Another thing cultivated by meditation, this ability to pause. And then it takes checking in. Does what we're doing lead to the kinds of thoughts and actions we want to cultivate, right? These are hard questions. The pausing is hard. I liken this in a way to saving for retirement or doing exercise or doing any of these things where what we're doing in the moment is something that is difficult, that has paybacks in the future, right? You know, by saving pennies now and foregoing things we could be doing with money, we're creating a future ease, right? That's the whole idea behind the saving for retirement thing. And the idea is that what we're doing outweighs the current difficulty we face by not, you know, using those pennies now. Exercise, such a similar thing, you know, at least for me, it's work. It's not something I always enjoy doing. But later, when I climb the flight of stairs, it feels a little better if I've been exercising, right? It feels better in the rest of my life. It avoids health issues, right? It's hard work. This resolve, it's a very direct path to ethical behavior, but it's a tough one. I'm going to acknowledge that. It's one, and I want to mention another thing Ajahn Suchito said before we turn to, or before I finish this talk. It's that it becomes easier, right? Think if you've ever come up with a budget and started to work to that budget, it's hard at first. We have to change our habits, but after a while, it becomes a little easier, right? We get used to the discipline. And it doesn't feel as much like discipline anymore. And we realize sometimes we realize it's not as hard as we thought. Some of us live with more difficulty than others, so I don't want to say that that's universally true. But we do get used to it. Exercise is the same. We get used to it after a while. And this is the same. When we get used to living within the ethical boundaries we've created, it feels less hard after a while. It comes more naturally. And we enter that state that I think of when I look at my colleague, right? We get to this state where we just become trustworthy. We can trust what's in our hearts. And we actually feel the freedom. We come into the state of lightness for having had this work that we did upfront. Okay. I'll end there after so many words. Thank you for sitting through this. And I want to turn now to a moment for discussion. So we're going to break into groups of three or four, and there'll be an opportunity to talk about anything that's come up for you today, in this is fair game. I want to note that, there are some guidelines for this discussion. The guidelines are to listen with an open heart to what others have to say, noting that you don't have to speak if you don't want to. You don't have to unveil something personal, right? Keep this safe for yourself. Also, don't offer advice or interrupt when others are speaking. This helps keep it safe for other people to share. And keep what's shared confidential. Within this group, we'll have an opportunity afterward to talk in the full group, and you can share things that have come up for you as a result of what other people have said. But the invitation, the guideline here is not to share what someone else has shared in order to keep that confidential. And lastly, allow each person time to speak, right? Not everyone will want to speak necessarily, but everyone, try to get that space. Okay. With that, feel free to talk about anything that's come up. And if you need a prompt for this, stories of moral beauty, right? Stories of times in your life where either your action or someone else's action has resulted in that feeling, right? You felt into the kindness, the compassion, the integrity of someone's actions, and it stirred you. So if you need something to think about, need a place to put your mind, that's a prompt. All right, well, with that, I'll get to the task of creating breakout groups. All right, welcome back, everyone. We have time now. For any questions, we don't have a ton of time today. I went a little bit longer than I expected, but we have time for a couple of questions or comments. Anything about the content today that you wanted to share, or anything that came up for you? And ways of doing this, probably the best way of doing this is you can raise your hand in the chat. Yeah, Jerry, I see you raising your hand.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I just appreciated what you're saying about the people who are taking care of that ship and putting ourselves in other people's shoes. What's it like to experience this? I really appreciate that as a practice. And you used one example, but there's so many opportunities, you know, day by day. Well, what's it like to be sitting here in the park, you know, under a tent during the rain? You know, there's so many ways. I see that as a helpful practice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good one you just mentioned, because that's one we encounter all the time here in Seattle, right? That's something we're likely to see very often. What is it like to, you know, Carrie's words were, you know, about the sensitivity to our, you know, how our actions affect others or how our inactions affect others. And what's it like to feel into that? We get this opportunity for that practice often, right? It's all over our world if we look for it. Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, there's, I can't see everyone's picture at once, but the way that you could definitely get my attention is if you raise your hand by clicking reactions, and raise hand. Liz, I see your hand up. Yeah, that's another way of doing it.
I couldn't figure out how to do the reactions. I'm still slow with the Zoom stuff.
All good. I got you.
We kind of got into a depth of conversation regarding like having compassion for people who have really, really like done some really terrible things, especially in the place of, you know, say crimes towards children or vulnerable people. And trying to figure out how to deal with their own feelings of, like trying to find that compassion, but also how to deal with that feeling of anger and, anyways, that's where that.
Oh, thank you. That's great. Often the anger we're feeling in that case is justified, right? It's an ethical reaction we're feeling. Yeah. So what's ethical here and what's compassion? There's also, I want to bring the word forgiveness in for these kinds of things too, right? Sometimes it's personal, sometimes it's not. You know, it could be a public figure that we find has done unforgivable things, or it could be a person in our lives that has done unforgivable things, or maybe I don't even need to use the word unforgivable. Things that are hard, things that are not ethical, or that we do that we feel are violating moral action. So one thing to note here is that feeling compassion doesn't have to be, you can feel compassion and also feel the other things, the moral outrage, the this is wrong. It doesn't require changing our feeling of what was wrong about the situation in order to also feel into the humanity of the person that committed these things. They are ultimately real people who do these things. And the reason I also mentioned the word forgiveness is there's an often stated thing about forgiveness, which is we don't do it for other people. We do it for ourselves, right? We're not releasing the other person from a moral obligation by feeling compassion for them. What we're doing is we're unblocking something within ourselves when we feel that compassion. We're unblocking a certain hardness that can sometimes get in the way by making us think, no, because this person did this thing, I can't feel anything good for them. I'm not allowed to feel that. I'm not supposed to feel that. If we're truly connected, we'll feel into the humanity of the person as well. So all of that is true at once. I think that's a really rich subject that you're talking about there. These are my thoughts on it. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts or any follow-up too. Okay.
Yeah. I like the idea of leaving space for both. Space for both, and sometimes just being unsure, to label unsure as being unsure and exploring that.
Yeah. It takes a lot to open to compassion in a lot of those situations. And it's difficult for different reasons too, right? You know, if it's personal, you know, that's a whole other layer of difficulty here. If it's impersonal but violating our moral feelings, well, that in a way feels very personal, doesn't it? Violating our morals within us. Maybe it's always personal at some level. Yeah, there's a real challenge in it there. But it's ultimately for us. Yeah. Okay, thank you. I'm afraid we don't really have much more time for this, since I want to leave somewhat on time. And there are also several announcements that are coming up in Sims. Just as spring has sprung, lots of activities are springing at Sims. So on April 9th, there is a new introduction to meditation class taught by Tim Guile, one of our guiding teachers. And that'll meet for, I think, 6 weeks, starting April 9th. All this information is on the website, so you can go there, too, to figure out more information. On April 13th, there's a meditation walk at Seward Park, hosted by the Climate Action Group, which just sounds delightful to me. Crossing fingers for good weather, but regardless, my goodness, to see how spring affects Seward Park. That'll be delightful in rain or shine. April 14th to 20th, Tim and Tuwere, both of our guiding teachers, are doing a 7-day retreat, 6-night retreat at Samish Island. It's full, but there's a wait list, and it's done via Bellingham Insight Meditation Society, not Sims. So if you're interested, there is information on the Sims website, but it'll point you to Bellingham, and it'll be a wait list. May 2nd, looking a little further forward, there is an evening with Anam Thubten. I don't know how to pronounce that. I hope it's somewhat close. And Anam Thubten, I believe, teaches from a Tibetan Buddhism perspective. May 3rd, the very next night, there's a talk by Ajahn Jayasaro. That'll be on a Friday evening. So more information about all of those things on the Sims website. One word about Dana. Few words about Dana. Sims and its teachers, we freely offer the teachings of the Buddha, regardless of ability to pay. So these are always made available to everyone. However, if you wish and are able to support the livelihood of teachers, or if this aids in a generosity practice, you can make a donation either to Sims or to individual teachers by going to the website. And let me post a link really quick. There is a link. All right. And with that, I will offer a metta meditation, a very brief one, just to end the session. May we awaken to the truth of our experiences. May we free ourselves from unnecessary suffering. May all beings awaken to the truth. May all beings be free of suffering. Thank you. All right. Hope you go and enjoy this beautiful day.